So today we have question answers, and there are four questions which are already there, so we'll go in sequence. Today is also the day when Gita Jayanti, which is the day when Shri Krishna has given the teaching to Arjun on the battlefield. Now when we look at it, it's one of those Ekadasis. That's how it has been preserved. So it's a way of preserving a teaching, this rote memory, which was a way before the printing press was there. Of course, Gita is very special. Who really remembered and wrote? But that's different. It's there in the as part of the Mahabharata text. And this was one of the way oral tradition in India has been very strong. So people till date continue with it. They remember, they recite the Vedas, the Upanishads and the Gita. Now with the printing press, probably it has a different role altogether. It's also important that while we read, as the mother says, a teaching is useful only to the extent that we can practice it. So more and more the stress should be on its spirit, because that form is needed at a point of time. Now Sri Aurobindo himself, when we see essays on the Gita, he has given it a new and wonderful form, a form more consistent with the age, where he has brought in elements which are new. They are there in the Gita, hidden. For instance, integral, he has used the word supramental here. But Shri Krishna directly doesn't speak of that. So the beauty of essays on the Gita is that takes into account the contemporary situations, how life has evolved, the questions in the mind of the new seeker, which were not exhausted by Arjuna and cannot be exhausted by anyone. So I personally feel reading essays on the Gita is a far more, and I wish somebody remembered when this book was born, because that will have for us a very personal significance. Okay, so I have seen very interesting preservation of a book by rote memory. Vedas, they have those Ved path and people who recite it with the right rhythm and everything. So basically, coming to the practice, this question is about, if you reflect more on the active, strong side of sadhana and yoga, and then on the inner, softer, harmonious, conscious side of sadhana and yoga. The Mahabharata is based on the yoga of action to fight without attachment and not hanging on the outcome, and required are also inner developments, and required are all the three aspects of yoga, jnana yoga, karma yoga and bhakti yoga, yes. So, and once in another talk, I seem to have mentioned something in a way like the yoga by action and physical force has also reflected in the essence of the Gita, has with the supramental more change to soft ways. There is something like feminine ways and ways of divine knowledge, divine love and divine compassion. So there are certain things which, let me first clear this. As far as strong physical action is concerned, that is also part of the feminine way. All execution, all organization, Kali is very much feminine. So in Indian thought, the division of feminine and masculine in its origin is not the division between hard powers and soft powers, so hard action and soft action. In India, the division is between the Purusha aspect, the laid back, the witness, who looks at life and creation but doesn't get involved in it. So there are two kinds of non-involvement. One is non-involvement equal to non-engagement. So this is one path which we see in the Gita, people who take to the silent Brahman. But the Gita speaks of another way of non-involvement. It is an inner detachment, tyaga, and not sannyas. So this is the So when we concentrate only on the masculine side, the masculine here is the passive witness Purusha. He doesn't involve, he doesn't engage himself. He is a witness, and it's in a way practiced by those who seek liberation from earthly life. So if you are not involved in anything, if you are not engaged in anything, after a while the consciousness begins to withdraw because it's no more outgoing, it's going inside. It's not easy, it's a very tough thing as it is, because there are 1001 ways through which nature will prompt the consciousness to come out. So one doesn't get the integral reality by doing it. But the Gita is a book which speaks of, in a sense, the integral reality. There is something going on here as well as inside, and therefore being a witness alone is not enough. You have to act. Action is given to us. So in that sense, all action belongs to the domain of, call it Shakti in its origin, call it Maya subsequently, call it Prakriti. All action is done by Prakriti. Strong action, soft action, thought, feelings, everything is Prakriti. And physical action. All is one continuum. There is nothing like, yes, in Prakriti we talk about the gradation of action. That's what probably you are referring to. So when Prakriti is in a very turbulent, violent mode, the action may be strongly rajasic. When Prakriti is in a laid-back, quiescent mode, it is more tamasic, which resists change. And when Prakriti is more in a sattvic mode, that's when what you say is very true. There is a natural tendency towards harmony, peace, compassion. And there is no doubt that sattvic action or sattvic state is superior to the rajasic and tamasic. And that's where the problem lies. Because on one side, sattvic state prepares you for going beyond. On the other hand, sattvic state can sometimes lead to a kind of certain degree of what is known as a sattvic vairagya from worldly life. So you stop engaging actively because you prefer harmony, you prefer kindness, and then become very difficult. So it's here that the Gita solves this problem. It doesn't give the solution that be in sattva or rajas. That's not the solution, because then we will swing. All human beings swing on the swing of nature. So when they are very sattvic, something will happen which will push them. Rajas will bring them back. And after engaging too much into a rajasic activity, they have a tendency to, because it's too much. Either they will sink into tamas or a tendency to look at life a little more dispassionately. This is the way the gunas are working, but the Gita is not giving that solution at all. Gita is giving us another solution, and that's to act under the guidance, under the complete prompting of the Ishvara. Now that's where the problem lies. Physical action, even a most violent physical action, can be undertaken. There is nothing against it. Neither the supermind nor the Gita would tell us that don't do it. But the difficulty is, are we tuned to that or not? So there are a few aphorisms of Sri Aurobindo, very interesting. One of them is, where he says, he who would not slay when God bids him does to the world an incalculable harm. This is one part. But he also says, the complementary aphorism, first be sure of the God's command, of God's command. Now, whole difficulty lies that normally we are not tuned to it. We are tuned to the voices of the ego, and they take 10,000 again forms. Ego, for example, one of the things that the ego very commonly, I am doing mother's work. I have an idea of mother's work. I have an idea of divine work. And I push myself to physical action. Now, it may be, and it's very common error, because ego takes so many forms. Mother has put me here, therefore I will do. Now, how do we know that this is God's command? So the Gita gives a step-by-step process. If I have the sense of the doer, I am not in the right consciousness. As it's a very simple test, if you look at Sri Aurobindo's writing. So who is the doer? So Sri Aurobindo says, distinguish between instrument, the force that moves the instrument, which is the real doer, and the master. Normally the instrument develops an egoism, be identified. And Sri Aurobindo even cautions us in the synthesis of yoga that ego of the instrument can suddenly lead one from a place where he was rising to a total doom. You can become an instrument of the titanic forces. And one classic example is Napoleon. So Napoleon, Sri Aurobindo says, he was an instrument, he was a vibhuti. And he writes an aphorism that he saw the hand of God striding through Europe. But what happened to Napoleon? So he describes, there was a point of time when Napoleon began to feel that Napoleon is France and France is Napoleon. He forgot that there is a greater power that is moving him. And the sign is that when the greater power moves, one becomes very humble. Because you realize that it's not you at all. It's not about you. It's a greater power that is moving you. All the great ones. Look at Sri Aurobindo, humblest of the humble. Though he is conducting the Second World War, if you look at it that way. But he would not command, I have this letter, what kind of disciples are you? Better do it, I need this, I need that. Nothing. Because one is aware of the greatness of the energy that is moving one. So, first step of yoga is to get rid of this idea, that instrument. So, Sri Aurobindo says, because Napoleon thought like that, he was broken and thrown aside by Kali. And I have referred to this in Indian context also. For instance, the Prime Minister of India earlier, Indira Gandhi, she became an instrument of mother's action in the 71 war. But beyond a point, she could not go. She also could not have that absolute trust. Mother wanted that India should take over Pakistan that time. She couldn't go, whatever her compulsions may be. It's not that anybody is right or wrong or blaming. She did a wonderful instrumental work with regard to Bangladesh. After that, if you look her over the years, the strong ego came in. And it kept on increasing because of the attachment to a son, attachment to family, and led to a kind of ruin. So the ego of the instrument, though she came, stayed with mother, mother really blessed her, she used, I mean, that she could become an instrument. Same thing we saw even recently. Luckily, the people understood. Otherwise, India started an upward curve, and suddenly one of the key leaders started believing that he is the one on whom India depends or world depends. No. The moment we have that egoism, we are gone. So the egoism of the instrument. Now you see the difficulty of the task. You may be a chosen instrument, but there is nothing like now the your work will be done by the divine. But if you believe that I am a chosen instrument, this I, divine is working with you today, tomorrow he may just keep you aside. There is a very beautiful summary of the Gita in Sri Aurobindo's writings, Delight of Works, where he says precisely this. He says the sword has a joy, talking of the instrumental ego. The sword has a joy in the battle, the sword has a joy when it is put aside, the sword has a joy when it is broken and thrown. That equal joy discover. The people who are meant for work, at a certain point of time, they should do it. Rather, they just... But to believe that because of me, I am indispensable, work cannot happen, and it is so common. So there is the instrumental ego. Second is the force. So that force which executes is nature. In yoga, we don't act according to the inferior modes of nature. In supramental yoga. In the Gita, you still have to act according to these three modes. That is the difference. So Sri Krishna says, inwardly you can be free. Don't identify with the instrument. Don't identify with the force. Yet it is the three gunas which will work. Because I have no option. You have only these three. But in the supramental, nature in her inferior mode can be substituted, must be substituted, and transformed into supernature. Means there is no more tamas, but self-existent peace. This peace will accompany even on the battlefield. It's not behind. It will be the nature of all action. That even when there is apparent outwardly bombing going on, and you are the one through whom it is happening, still there will be peace. So it can go to that extent. Self-existent peace of the divine. Rajas will change into luminous force of the divine mother. So there is no fatigue, there is no, you know, all those reactions of Raja. Oh, it didn't work out. I didn't succeed. This will not be there, because the divine mother, the divine force can accomplish itself through even failures and apparent retractions. It's not a slave to our format. So, Shobindo himself, if you look at it, he left the field of Indian freedom movement, because of course he described that he had already laid down the lines. People called him name, but he withdrew. Tactical, strategic retreat, the same thing on 5th December. It can fulfill itself in any which way, because it's a luminous force. It knows what is best at each moment. You can't put it into a slot. And that's how Amal Kiran describes how the mother at one point, she said, not a comma should be changed in Savitri. How do you know? He said that, no, we were only thinking that he has not revised this particular book. So perhaps, so how do you know that he didn't mean not to revise it? How do I know that the divine did not, deliberately didn't revise it? See, how the mind's format will not allow this thought. But divine is divine. He acts in perfect freedom. But he says the next time, he kept quiet. He has used words like these two we know. But next time when he suggested that, mother, here are the things and, you know, we are planning these, could be oversight or whatever, then she graciously agreed. Same thing. On one side, she says nothing should be changed. On another side, she agreed. After all, people talk about 54 edition and 72 edition. Both are during mother's time. And 72 edition does carry certain corrections, if you want to put it like that. So why? So then Amal Kiran very beautifully, correctly, I completely agree. He says, my approach when I went to the first time was as if I can correct or improve upon. So the Divine Mother gave me a very good dressing down. Next time I went with all humility and surrender and the spirit of service, and she was all compassion. So you see the soft and hard action. There is no, the same mother. There are so many examples where one moment she has given even a hard blow, and the next moment she is like a mother. Because in that force there is no fixed format. So second is the force, whereas human nature doesn't operate like that. It invariably operates through certain its own ideas, its own views. And sattva will change into a complete divine delight and the divine light. That is the nature. So there is no calculation, there is the light which shows you, and there is the delight in the action. So sukham and prakasham and sukham changes into light and delight. So that's why the supramental yoga is upgrading this nature. So when you upgrade the nature, I am connecting with that aspect of the supramental yoga. It's not about soft part. No, it's very powerful. Supramental action can be devastating. Sri Aurobindo himself said, I never use this force because earth cannot bear it. So he used to use the overmind force. So, but when you have to upgrade from the lower nature to the super nature, you have to go through that state when you are relatively, you have to practice that inner peace, equanimity. It's like that famous example of, you take a scooter and you give it to the mechanic and say, or a car, okay, I need to get it corrected. But you know what, you please correct it, but I'll keep it running and keep it moving around, you correct it. He'll say, it's just not possible. Even a surgeon who operates on the heart temporarily suspends its action. So you have the heart-lung machine, where for a moment a machine is doing the work. Your heart is, how can you operate on a running machine? So the old nature has to be quietened. It has to learn that I don't know. And it has to change from ways human to ways divine. Like Savitri says that human love is the most powerful force, but it must first change its human ways into ways divine. So with supramental nature, the action, this additional thing comes in. And finally, the master. So these are the three levels. Instrument is instrument. Force is nature. Lower nature ordinarily in the yoga of the Gita, you are still acting through lower nature, but you are inwardly free because you are not identified with nature. And the third is the master, that is the Purushottama. That's where Gita takes us. For us, it means that who is the master? The Divine Mother. But what is my identity? My identity is that I am a portion of the Divine Mother. And lower nature must change into higher nature. And this instrument, which has limitations, the instrument created by nature, brain and heart and body and limbs, they must also be transmuted into, they should be capable of bearing the flow of the high tension super nature. Right now they'll break down. So that's why transformation is a process in which we have to, slightly, there's no particular word, because you can continue the process even on the battlefield. But you have to, at some point, give a little pause button and, step back. That's why she describes. Otherwise, yoga of the Gita, if it is concerned, yes. Because there is no idea of upgrading the nature. There is no idea of rediscovering yourself. All that you have to know is that ego and desire should not be there. As to action, even the Gita as well as supramental. Heart physical action is very much part of it. But ordinarily, supramental action and even a very high yogic action takes place through several instruments, not one. Like when Sri Aurobindo in his room worked upon the Second World War, he was not physically going. This idea that I have to be physically present. So a yogi acts like that. The more he ascends, his thought have a tendency to echo in thousands of mind because he has become a hub of these thoughts. It's not necessary that always he has to, physically do that same thing. And it can inspire millions who will sacrifice their life. Look at Sri Aurobindo's revolutionary movement. It's not that Sri Aurobindo himself actually took a gun. He never took a gun. He is capable of doing it. He could do it. Not that there is a taboo that I won't do it. But he was capable of doing it. But Sri Aurobindo inspired Khudiram Bose, who ultimately was hanged to death. 17-year-old boy. Sri Aurobindo inspired Anushilan Samiti, Bagha Jatin, whose grandchildren studied in the ashram school. He was known as the lion, Bagha Jatin, great revolutionary. Sri Aurobindo inspired Subhash Chandra Bose, who went on along his own line at a tangent, but in the name of Sri Aurobindo. So if you look at Subhash Chandra Bose, so many killings would have taken place, very hard physical action. And that's a lesson to learn. Whereas the force, he did all this that, I'm inspired by Sri Aurobindo. Among the most prominent leaders whom he felt inspired by is Sri Aurobindo. But here comes the problem, because if action is not, if we have not really practiced Gyan Yoga, that's where Gyan Karma Bhakti comes, then where will this action deviate is difficult to say. And Subhash Chandra Bose is a classic example. I'll just complete and then I'll come. So Subhash Chandra Bose was inspired by Sri Aurobindo, and Sri Aurobindo was okay with, violent action, and you have to do an uprising, and probably it did have a role as far as the British government is concerned, because they found the conditions difficult, especially after the Second World War. It was difficult for them to sustain. So it's likely that, he had a role to play. But the same Subhash Chandra Bose, as Sri Aurobindo says, human strength stumbles by its own speed. Human love stumbles by its own intensity. So what happened with him? Because he was that nishkam karma, he could not really practice. So at a point of time, he saw that, you know, if we can meet, shake hands with Nazi Germany, it's an opportunity for us. And when he went and shook hands with Hitler, Shobindu was not only disappointed, he made a remark. Where Dilip Kumar Roy and all these people were very fond of him. He was a friend. He said, he doesn't know what he is doing. And the mother turned her face away. How can he do this? So dangerous. But he thought of bringing Japan and Germany both. And he said, if that happens, we have finished the work. So you see, the line is so thin between doing God's work and damaging it. So knowledge means here the true knowledge. When God bids us to say slay, but the moment he says stop, it should not be even a second's delay that you gave me the command to slay, I have come up to the neck, let me complete and execute it. No, stop. That should be the degree of surrender. Very difficult to achieve. So one can never be too certain about the command of God. That's important. Similarly, love. Love by its intensity changes into hate. One starts with this idea that I don't hate the person. I am doing impersonally because it's the divine will. But when this changes into a personal grievance, this too I have noticed, and even in the recent things. Because then the person becomes blinded. Oh, this person, he dared to speak against me. Doesn't he know that I am acting on behalf of mother? And then what happens? Even if there is something good about the person, something genuine, you are not able to see that. So that plasticity and wideness. So love is important because love sees the divine in all beings. That's how Sri Krishna acts. And that's why he cautions Arjun. And time to time there is a reminder. There is a very nice story from Mahabharata. That when he is shooting arrows and has his, combat of a lifetime with Karna. They have to prove to each other who is best. Not Arjun, but Karna wants to prove. So at one point, Sri Krishna tells Arjun, oh, what a shot Karna has put. He says, what? He says, yes, just see, your chariot has moved couple of feet behind. He says, but sir, my arrows, you didn't notice, it's moving his chariot few hundred feet behind. That is the intensity of my arrows. He said, oh, don't you remember that I am sitting on your chariot with the burden of the three worlds and Hanuman himself is there. So you can't compare your situation with Karna. Look at it. So in the middle of the war, he is teaching him the lesson of humility. It's not you. Don't forget that. So that's why this is a very thin line where one can just slip. So all action can be done, including battle, including anything. But one should be cautious. And if one doesn't have a greater light at hand, then sattvic action. That's where the softy part comes in. Because when you don't have access to the higher light, you want to be, you know, a little more sattvically tuned. You don't want to. So sattvically tuned means going by the Shastra. Sattvic people will act according to what is the best thing at a given point of time. They want to act according to Shastra. This is the challenge. But nothing is taboo. All action is feminine. From the softest to the hardest. And we know it. See, I always felt that fathers are very feminine. No, why are you shouting at the boy? It's okay, he's asking money. Mothers, they are at once very soft, but on the other hand, go to school. They will sometimes say it very softly, but if necessary, they will go to any extent. So, I don't think men are hard. They have brute strength, unfortunately. That too is nowadays, you can't say, thanks to the lifestyle, women are stronger. Because women are continuing to work physically. Men have become couch potatoes. So, their only plus point was physical strength, that is taken away. And now women are in every field. They are driving, they are fighting arms. How can you meet? So now all strength is feminine. From the softest to the hardest. This how I... Yes, you were saying something. Yeah.
I have another question for me. Is also what I understood, that knowledge is the highest power or the biggest power.
Yes.
When I read the book, The Incredible History of India, I recognized that 3 points allowed to occupy and possess India. The first one was to have the map route for the seas, the other one to have guns, and the other one is to do the mapping, land mapping of India. These 3 points, from my understanding, allowed every other company to occupy.
Yes.
So I recognized how much the power of knowledge is, and that was normally in the West, maybe in India different, but in the West, giving to the male.
You have touched a very, very important point. And so let me share. There are two Indias, spiritual Indias, let me put it like that, that exist right now. The India before Buddhism, that's the India of Sri Krishna. All kinds of knowledge is there. You know, when Lord Rama, he asks Lakshman to learn from Ravan, who is on his deathbed, about statecraft. And there is a whole dialogue between Lord Rama and Shatrughan. He explains to him in great detail that, you know, which parts of army should be strong, how you have to defend against different. All this knowledge, I completely agree, is part of integral knowledge. It was once post-Buddhism and again post-Shankaracharya. Though Shankaracharya tried to apparently counter Buddhism, but ended up reinforcing it. So this post-Buddhism and post-Shankaracharya India, knowledge was considered only knowledge of the silent Brahman, which was disconnected with the world. It is Maya. It's because of that. And every talk, wherever I go, I tell them, if you are reinforcing the India of post-Buddhist and post-Shankaracharya, you are doing a disservice to India. This is not the original Sanatana Dharma. He did a great job, again, and in his own time, all this was required. Buddha was required in his time to teach us that, you know, conquer your desire. That was his mission, to overcome suffering. And Buddha was not concerned with a cosmic problem. And he is very much regarded as part of Sanatana Dharma. He spoke about Arya, he spoke about just defense. So not Buddha, I'm talking of Buddhist, post-Buddhism. And the Western world, since you mentioned it, has promoted Buddhist India and Gandhian India and Gandhi because it served the interest. The moment there was a pushback, oh, you are supposed to be a non-violent people. So I quite agree with you. But that is because we are a confused lot as Indians. We still, you see, wherever you go, the same traditional thing is going on. Even Sri Krishna. People will read the Gita. In practice, there are temples of Sri Krishna, all with Radha and gopis and gop and dance. They don't understand Sri Krishna of Kurukshetra. In India, I'm talking of. They don't live the Gita. They read. But where do they live the Gita? Where is Nishkam Karma? Even if your house is blown away, you still belong to God. There is no flinching in you. That's Nishkam Karma. Even if your own people are in trouble, you are still concerned about the greater good, the Lok Sangrahart. Nobody is living it. So it's important that we bring back the original teaching. And everywhere I tell them, if you are promoting the post-Shankara Sanatana Dharma, then that's not the India which can save itself and the world. That was the reason for its downfall. And I know a lot of people raise eyebrows. But to me, India, Sanatana Dharma is Sri Krishna, Sri Ram, and the rishis who fought the war valiantly. They were very passionate. They were, you know, they uttered the mantra, the power that can break open things. They had powers which they can you know, utilize for the good of earth. Rishi Agastya, whose land we are sitting in, he is the seer who gave special weapons to Lord Rama to kill Ravan. And he actually sat in meditation that when the war is going on, don't disturb me. I am needed for this action. That is India. My identification is with Agastya, Vasishtha. They had the power to, I mean, I believe it is true, to change the earth conditions. They were not acting according to our idea, global warming, let's do something physical. They had the power to give the right ideas and move the people in the right direction. That's how they are described. The stories of women who could stop the movement of sun means they could slow time, contract time, expand time. So this is the India, and I quite agree. That knowledge is power. Not the knowledge of silent Brahman and this is Maya, that cannot be power by its nature. So later on, this is what people began to interpret knowledge. Knowledge is that which makes you free from ignorance, and ignorance is due to Maya. Knowledge will set you free, make you understand this is Maya, this is entanglement, this is attachment, this, that, 100. Finished. So this is important. And we are still continuing with the same old pattern. Maya doesn't leave so easily. We had Shankaracharya coming to ashram. You know that, no? His seat was being carried, his chamber umbrella was being carried, but the umbrella couldn't enter the door. So he had to go through the door without the umbrella. This was a lesson. Be humble. But there are people who follow that. They think just because he is using symbols of Hinduism, therefore he is Hindu. One may read the Gita a million times, but one has to practice. That's what Mother says, that a drop of practice is much more important than an ocean of theories, resolutions. So this is also a very interesting question. That's on WhatsApp. So, okay. But man is the individual self owing to his ignorant self-identification with the work and the becoming, as if that were all his soul and not a power of his soul, a power preceding it. So this is from the Gita, where we get identified precisely with the instrument, with the working of nature, and therefore we have no real freedom. We believe we are choosing, but nature is choosing in us. He must, to be free, get back from the nature action to the status of the Akshar. Yes, he will then be Trigunatit, beyond the gunas. Knowing himself as the Akshar Brahman, the unchanging Purusha, he will know himself as an immutable, impersonal self, the Atma. So this is where people stopped. Precisely what we did. So now, when we are aware of our limitations, happiness, grief, desire and passion, attachment and disgust, trying to surrender to Mother even after that, many times overpowered by those weaknesses. Very true. His awareness and surrendering itself, a good effort, very good effort. I don't know, without surrender, how can we really get rid of it? But that's where the effort comes at sincerity. So Mother says all weakness is insincerity. We try to justify it. But first we should admit that, well, there is a weakness inside. If I have a pain here and or in the chest and I don't tell the doctor because I'm afraid there may be a heart disease, and I say, actually, you know, my stomach, actually patients come like that. Actually, it's something happening in the stomach because there is a fear. Well, tell the honest truth. Whether there is a heart disease or not is a later issue. So looking at life squarely is one of the things that the Gita teaches us. The people standing against you are your friends, your family, your relatives. But Arjun, they are with adharma. So that's where attachment. It's okay to enjoy with them so long as you are not into this conflict. Shri Krishna never tells him that, look, you know, all this family is all Maya, you get it. He doesn't do that. Arjun is happy. He is lying his head on the lap of Bhishma and enjoying it. But the day he has to make a decisive choice. So there are moments in history, in our individual life, in collective life, when we have to make a choice. And these choices are going to change our own destiny and the earth. That's when we have to be very careful that these attachments, which were sort of okay, from the highest yogic point, it's best that we get rid of them because they will pain at point. Why we should get rid of it? Because it will bring pain and suffering, all attachment. Should we not love? Of course we should love. And Sri Aurobindo described very well. Attachment is egoism in love. If I love because of what I may get out of it, then it will bring pain. It's not about yoga, leave aside yoga. Because nobody can fulfill, you know, what I will get is, you know. So that's why it is true. And well, what does one do? One does a little bit one's own effort, inner surgery. But difficult for a surgeon to operate upon himself, he can operate others. So that's why it's so easy to point out other, you know, you have got too much attachment. That's surgeon's job, no? But I have attachment, I can operate, very difficult. So surrender, divine surgeon will do it. But he does it beautifully. There is a whole little prayer of Nalnida. He says, Lord, today there were very few lemons. The lemon size has become smaller in the dining room and they have become fewer. With a butcher's knife, take away from me this thought that came. Now you see, he is not saying, please ensure that lemons are more. After all, we are sadhaks. Pondicherry summer, at least we have a right to lemons. Maybe if you tell the mother or the people who are working to give more lemons, he is not saying any of this. There are letters like that also to Sri Aurobindo and the mother. But Nalnida is saying, take away this thought from me with a butcher's knife. What does Sri Aurobindo write? He says, take away, yes, but why with a butcher's knife? Why not with a surgeon's scalpel? Don't make me a butcher. So when he does it in a way that only that part is operated, but the rest is not affected. When we do it, for instance, when we try to get rid of attachment, because we are very attached to somebody, let's say, then we throw away the baby with the bathwater. We start saying all world is like this and you know you should never love anyone. You loved wrongly or falsely, correct that. People become cynics, they become disillusioned, they become skeptics. So this is human way of doing it where you use a nuclear bomb to kill few mosquitoes. But the divine does it very finely. He keeps the love intact but takes away the attachment. This tried, tested, confirmed several times. This is how he works. So yes, so awareness of the problem correctly is the first step. And surrendering it is the most important. And one has to keep doing it, persevering. We should wait for the result in the sense that we would be completely out of these dualities. Waiting is something which is an act spiritually. Those who cannot wait don't get anything. To learn to wait is to put time on your side because these are the four aids. Certain things one has to wait for long. Vedic rishis say many long nights have we gone through. That's why people spoke about the Arctic Circle. 9 months, 10 months, long nights waiting for the sun. Sun will come in its own time, by the way. The divine knows when to give you. But then why we should wait? Because when we wait, we are ready to receive. If we don't wait, if we get angry and we run away, divine will ultimately does, but we are not ready, we are not receiving. So one has to learn to wait, and with the change of nature, I would say, lifetime if necessary. My personal agenda, even at the deathbed if we can do, or even post that, so keep striving. When he will do, maybe as soon as you are departing, he does it and you have the grand revelation. Every moment, last breath, surrender. We can be sure of it through our bhakti, devotion and surrender to Divine Mother. Yes, without bhakti, Surrender is a part of bhakti. There is no surrender which is without. It can be a mental bhakti. But without, surrender is an act of bhakti because it implies, I have complete trust in you. It implies, whatever you do, now I will accept your will in my life. You may shatter me to pieces, fine. I belong to you. When we say I give myself to you, means what? If you break me to pieces, fine. I will know that you are probably trying to rebuild me. But the divine may say, no, I am breaking you to pieces just to pulverize you into dust. Fine. Then he'll say, keep the dust at your feet. If not, scatter it for the passerbys so that their feet may hurt less. This should be the surrender. What you will do with the dust is your wish. The mother's, some of the prayers are like that. And then she says, when I surrendered, all fell down, and then the divine, she knows that, you know, thou hast touched this dust and purified it. A surrender implies that complete self-giving. Without love and bhakti, of course not the bhakti which is jumping, dancing, singing bhajan and all that is not bhakti. But putting a big tikka, I am a bhakta. Whom are we fooling? God is not fooled by our tikka and janev. He knows what's going on inside. He's not fooled by your surname or your, oh, you are from India, therefore, you know, you are a great bhakta. Nonsense. I mean, anybody with basic spiritual understanding. Again, since I mentioned, Indians are so fortunate to have such an inheritance. But who is using it? Most of it is being squandered. As you mentioned about the cartography. See how we had developed. Because we believed in the integral reality. That Brahman is that knowing which all else can be known. Now what is the definition of Brahman? Ask anyone. No, this world is Maya. So Maya is saying, okay, I am going to deceive you by your nirvana. Because you believe you are a separate entity and others are others. That's the deception. Shurvindo, by uttering the words of Ishopanishad. Wow, it's a complimentary thing. Yes to Sarvani Bhutani. He could feel the divine in each and every soul. Bhutani is not just soul. It's in each element, particle of creation, atom of existence. Bhutadi. Bhutadi is about element. So, the soul part comes earlier. Yes means Sarvani. So, but yes to Sarvani Bhutani, Atmai va bhud vijanata. The self has become all this, become the glass, the water. It's only possible in a supramental state. Mother speaks about it. But the seers had an inkling of it. Being an avatar and himself divine, he had done this for the sake of us. Yes. So when we open ourselves more and more to their love, this must be possible for us too. There is no other way but to open with more and more love and surrender. Because, and there is a logic to it, love does the magic, because if yoga is union with the divine, becoming one with the divine, what is the power that brings any union fastest? Love. So if we go by love, the union is the fastest. And I use this analogy which we can quickly use. See, this again, jnana, karma and bhakti, they are three one, but bhakti is the crown always. Shobindu speaks about it. And even if you see the synthesis of yoga, first is works, because work is natural to us. It's the right entry. But we must understand that if we keep doing work blindly without the true knowledge awakening, it's blind. So next is yoga of integral knowledge. Final is love. If love is awakened, you are through. So this love, where one gives oneself completely to the divine, it brings us fastest to the union. So the analogy is, if we want to just understand God intellectually, where will he take us? To his study room. He'll show us the books, look, Upanishad, this, that, all these are from my ray of my light has gone into it. And we may come back satisfied that I am a jnani. God himself has taught me the Upanishads and the Vedas. But if we care to listen, if we care to understand that he is trying to say something, would you want to actually put it into practice and live it? Yes, sir. I don't want to go away without that. Okay. Be in my service. Now what happens? A servant, and better still a slave, understands better. Because he's all the time with the divine. He understands not just theoretically, but understands what the master wants. He understands those gestures. He's not going according to a book knowledge. So servant and slave of God. But to one who loves him, he says, see, when you are sleeping, you tell the servant that, okay, you can rest. Or the slave, you can rest. But whom does he take into his inmost chambers and on his bed as a bedfellow, the beloved? And when they sleep together arm in arm, then he says, I'll tell you my dreams, which I've shared with nobody. So the lover is a privy to the deepest secrets of the divine. And that's why he is the most privileged one. Shobindo even goes on to say in the Synthesis of Yoga that about this aspect, those who love God, human tongue fails, it cannot describe all that is possible. And then he says, there is nothing impossible or denied to the God lover, for he is the very self of the divine beloved. So if you ask the divine, who is yourself? He will say, my devotee. You'll not say, I am myself, you don't know. So, bhakti, if it has awakened, I just feel one is a thrice blessed person. But it's very difficult, especially in today's times. Any action can create a lot of harm, very true. This applies to the usage of words, absolutely, as well as the development of a nuclear bomb, absolutely. Any action. And I would add, to silence and non-usage of nuclear bomb. Because that too is action. I am talking of the Gita's sense. In the spirit of the Gita, inaction is also an action. Because it implies a choice. So when we, let's say, don't speak. There is a story of, one was Chaman Lalji when he wanted to go. Somebody invited him to go out abroad and speak. So he said, should I go? He says, what do you want? I don't know, mother, whatever you tell me. He said, no. Do you want to go abroad? So he said, mother, not to my conscious thinking. Then she, of course, smiled. And then she said, yes, you must go. Because somebody else will otherwise go. Same thing happened with writing of Shobindo's biography for 1972. So the person who wrote, he asked the mother, should I write or not write? I don't think I am capable of writing it. She said, yes, nobody is capable of writing it. But if you don't write, somebody else will write and do much worse. So, one is that, you know, again, to speak or not to speak, to act or not to act. Either way, there will be some harm, some good. And that's how mother says in one of her prayers. Any action upon earth will always carry these two sides. So how does the divine then decide? He sees the totality, whether the civilization moves one step forward or not. That's all. So in the Gita, that is the criteria. There is devastation, like a nuclear bomb. Still Sri Krishna goes ahead with it. And Sri Aurobindo says that Sri Krishna, through the Kurukshetra, saved India. The question was between saving lives and saving India. And Shobindo has an aphorism to this. Men die so that man may live and God be born. Sometimes that's a price because humanity is not ready. Ideal state is where there is no harm. The world is not ready for that. So there will be some harm. As in fact, nuclear bomb reminds us, nuclear power has been given prematurely to man. Shobindo's own words. Because at that point it was required. Now you know that power is in the hands of all kinds of people. So yes, it will do some. If we weigh these things, we won't be able to act. Because any which way, Now, that too he says in the essays on the Gita. He says, well, there are some people who want to keep their hands clean. I am not responsible for what happens. But he says that is even more devastating. And he gives the example of Vasisht Rishi. That Vasisht uses only soul power, because something inside is prompting us, you know, that, but we will not act. So Vasisht uses soul force against Vishwamitra. But armies of Huns and Shakyas come stooping over India later on. Because he doesn't want to use physical force, he wants to use only soul force. He says moral power force can itself be very devastating. That's why he says sometimes it's better to stay physically if need be. Because it's less harmful eventually than just to get that anger inside, and it has its own effect. And even if I just abstain, maybe people will revere what a saintly person. But it has done to the world an incalculable harm. So this cannot be avoided. Earthly life as it is today, some harm to someone. Only thing is, if we have done it with the best of intentions, which God only will know, not ourselves, in that true surrender, then what will happen? Through evil, God will bring out good much faster. Eventually, always it will happen. But he will bring out much faster, individually as well as collectively. That's the only thing that is possible. So, realizers, dreamers, architects, artists, etc., and decision-making leaders must be naturally very concerned about the outcome of their actions. They are not, because they are not yogis. See, that's the problem. There are two kinds of such people. One is those who are driven by an enthusiasmos, a kind of inner urge to act. It can be godlike or it can be titanic. They don't know it. But they are moved by unseen hands and unseen forces. They act. And based on their actions, there are counteractions through which God fulfills himself. So they are not yogis. That's why people often, you know, even about the Indian context, this minister, that minister, they are not yogis. You should understand the difference. They are instruments, and they may be instrument of the divine, but the next moment they can also become instrument of something evil. One has to be very conscious. But if they do so, divine is his ways and means of throwing aside. So this is how the world marches. So they are not, unfortunately, they don't even know the immediate outcome, forget about long-term outcomes. People live in crass ignorance. They don't even care for outcome. Their only outcome is my chair should be safe. My name should be written in the history book. That here was a leader who was of this stature. They are not bothered beyond their photograph. It's very sad. I mean, I have seen so much of all this. To what extent is attachment possible for them? Totally attached. Particularly world leaders, politicians, creative people, architects, even so-called people practicing yoga, I have seen. They going to Shabda and asking, how is my book doing? Actually, is it selling? Why don't you keep it here in display so that, and here is a person who has been in ashram practicing yoga. So, well, it requires a great degree of sincerity which is missing. So people write and start believing you are an author and a writer. People may think whatever they want to think about you. They may think you are stupid, they may think you are wise, it doesn't make a difference. But this may get into the head. I have heard people say, even in the ashram context, who have been grown up in that ashram, say, you know, we are providing to the ashramite. And somebody had to tell him, stop, who are you? You may be a trustee, but you are not providing, mother is providing. This is a new age which is coming up. But that old type thought is still I. My. Yes, you are saying something.
I remember that mother said to Buddha,
yes,
consider painting as a yoga.
Consider?
Pending.
Ah, no. Painting is, yes, exactly. But whether she took it like that or not is the issue. I mean, I am not saying anything personal. But once it did happen, that, I mean, I am very frank about this. People can, I met her, and along with, you know, my wife and somebody else, my child, we went. And she started saying, you know, so special about me, about herself. And mother, she treated me so specially, she did this, she gave this, now she's no more, so I can say this. So, somebody had to interrupt that, and when mother was here, constantly, refrain was when mother was here. And we had to tell her, mother is still here, we have never felt that she is not here. No, that is different, you people have come later, we were special, chosen one. So, again, that's why eulogizing human beings is so dangerous. I keep telling people, don't eulogize anyone. I mean, even towards me, sometimes they do Param Sadhya. I say, don't do all this nonsense. All greatness belongs to God. If some good is done through anyone, it's the divine's greatness. But the moment you eulogize, we have done a great harm by eulogizing. Well, it's not the person. It's the divine force has worked. How much that person has opened through it, progress through it is up to each one. Mother gave everybody a chance. Huta, she taught from holding hand to draw a straight line. What she changed Huta into is mother's greatness and her work. But sometimes, and that's why you see it's a sad thing that so many of her, you know, conversations with mother and letters or whatever, is just lying. The world has been deprived of it. That is also a fact. Why? Because they are mine. They are not yours. They are mother's. They don't belong to you. World is deprived. There is such a treasure which is lying. And whoever is the trustees now, I keep telling. So, I used to press this. He had made me one of the trustees. Since you mentioned, Uta, that's why I am saying. This is a story of everyone. So, everybody, she would introduce me. He is one of our trustees from Hawaii. I said, I am not any trustee or any. He made me. I am not a signatory. I belong to mother. So one day I said something like that. He got very annoyed. I'll do it in my own time. I said, but this is not the way you should. This is mother's treasure. It's not your personal treasure. So you see, mother has given so much to everybody. I believe she can pick up a man who is spiritually a beggar. I'm not talking outwardly. And raise him to a spiritual king. But where he will start believing my greatness, this was the whole thing. And the slope, as you climb through the mountain, she has said it runs in both directions. When you are on the plains, it's okay. But as you climb the slopes, then the abyss also becomes very big. And that's what happened with some of these ones. Great ones. Great because the divine did do something very great through them. But where will it open these downfall to the abyss? Then it's precipitous because, you know, you realize, you feel that I am God's special one. And that story comes in Bhagavad with Arjun. I have referred to that story earlier. All greatness belongs to the divine, nothing else. And the sign that really the divine has worked through you is that you become more and more humble because you realize it's not you. You're not fooled by people talking about you because you realize more. But if instead we get it into our head that it's me, really, something very special. Mother has chosen me. And my child, I can pick up a pebble and make it into God. Who are you? So I quite agree with that. And this is a story of so many. And one can never be vigilant enough. Humility is the safeguard on the path. Sincerity is the safeguard on the path. People begin to start putting on airs. I am a special sadhak, devotee. They won't speak easily to others because, you know, you are now a VIP line. Anyway, that's a long story. But yes, some of it is one cannot be conscious enough, one cannot be sincere enough on the path of yoga. Never can one say resting that I have had this wonderful experience and realization. From now onward, I am the Holy One. The more one progresses on the yoga, the more one becomes like a child. Child free of all formats, always full of wonder, full of delight, with a whole eternity before one. As Shubhendu says, who is God? God is a child playing with the divine child in the garden of eternity. Okay. Jai Ma.